Welcome, everyone. It's again good to see you, Paul, Gloria, Marina, Judd, and Mayor. It's good to have all of you on. I can only hope, as I mentioned before, that this new microphone will enhance the quality of our sheer time together. Today is, God willing, about to be a monumental day for us because, God willing, 17A, as you see, we're on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. And if you just glance at the Amud, you'll notice that smack in middle of the page, we are set, God willing, to finish the first perek of Megillah. And just to give you an idea, I know the Art Scroll Megillah is only one volume, but Masifta is two volumes. So in middle of tonight, I mean, I looked at it beforehand, I'm not really going to use it so much, but I'm switching from the first volume of the Masifta Gemara to the second and final one for Megillah. So there's another indication, a feeling that we've hit the half point. This is the longest perek that we're going to have in the Masechta. And so if you can make it through the first perek, as we are, God willing, about to do, you can make it through the rest of the prakim as well, Be'ezras Hashem. However, the Chachamim did not want to let us off the hook so easily. As you remember, the past few weeks, we've been gliding through. We've been enjoying ourselves through all the Agadita. It's been a breeze, right? But the Chachamim said, if you want to earn that badge, you want to earn the recognition of finishing the first perek of Megillah, you will have to do so by trial by fire. You're going to have to be able to do some mathematics. Now, who are mathematicians here? I think Arthur, are you a mathematician? For some reason, I thought you were a mathematician. Any mathematicians here? Marina, I know Alex is a mathematician, right? Okay, somewhat. Okay. So you know what? I'm not a mathematician. I got tutored in high school to pass my Regents in New York. So you're going to have to bear with me through this. But I thought before we jump in... Okay. So Rameyer has a degree from 100 years ago in math and computer science. While the computer science, I'm sure, has been updated somewhat, I'm sure many of the basic principles of arithmetic that we'll be applying tonight, for the most part, have remained the same. Nothing, not doing anything too advanced over here. And I just want to share one idea from last time that we left off with. I think a number of us, I know Phyllis, you in particular, told me, were puzzled by a line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosef Metzas Nefashos. We learned that studying Talmud Torah is greater than saving lives. And as Phyllis and many of you asked, in wonderment, what does that mean? We know that if someone's life is in danger, we're supposed to, you know, if God forbid, someone's life is in danger here, I should stop the shear and save that person's life. So what does that mean, that Talmud Torah is greater? There's a few answers given. We gave one last time that it may be qualitatively greater, but nonetheless, I'm not obligated in it at a time that someone's life needs to be saved. But another answer, it's given by the Taz. The Taz says that what does it mean that you have, that's a greater thing? It's greater because halavai, you should have the schus, you should have the merit that you don't need to stop your Talmud Torah in order to save someone's life. That's what it's saying, meaning it'd be much greater for Mordechai had he not had to stop his learning and save everyone. But certainly, as we see, people's lives need to be saved, and Mordechai put down his Gemara, or whatever they had back then, and he went and he helped the Jewish people. Okay, excellent. So, moving on to our Gemara for tonight. You know, there's a Yehi Ratzon that we say at the beginning of, welcome, Bobby, good to see you, and Oliver, looks like and Erwin are on as well. Oh, and welcome, Emily. Emily, good to see you. Good to have you on with us. We're finishing, God willing, the first chapter of Megillah momentarily. Do not get scared. We usually don't have mathematics in the Gemara. This is one of those nights, so trial by fire, as I said, for those joining us. But we'll start the new chapter, God willing, halfway in. So here we go. Last time we left off learning that we said, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoser Mikibud Avein. We learned that Talmud Torah supersedes the mitzvah of honoring one's father and mother. How do you figure? Well, we know that Yaakov studied in Yeshivas Shem Ve'Aver for 12 whole years. Now, in a monorthodox community, we complain if the kid goes for 1 or 2 years to learn in yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov, you know, went for 12 whole years, and he stayed there for 12 consecutive years learning Torah. And at the expense of serving his father and mother. Yet we know that those 12 years were not accounted for when he was to be punished, as we'll see later on, that Yosef, his son, left him for 22 years when he was abducted and sent down to Egypt. But yet, the 12 years that Yaakov spent in Yeshiva Sheim Be'aver do not count against him. And we'll see that later on. So we said, how do we know this? So this is from last time. Damar Mar on the top of Yitzayin Ma'av, the top of 17a. Lama Nimnu Shnosef Shal Yishmael. Why does the Torah list the years of the life of Yishmael? Right? Yishmael was not such a good guy. So why would the Torah want to record him? Usually we record the good guys. So to use it as a reference point to calculate the years of Yaakov's life, so that Yishmael, we know, lived to 137 years. And by knowing how old Yishmael was, we could figure out how old Yaakov was in his life. So get ready. This is where the mathematics come in. I don't know if it's, I don't know. Does Art Scroll have like the mathematics put out in a footnote? I imagine they would do something like that. Folks who have the Art Scroll, do they give you a chart? Because I'll just show you what I have. I just put all the calculations down on this post-it over here. I don't think me holding it up here is going to help you, but hopefully it'll help me because I like the visual representation. So here we go. Kama koshet Yishmael mi Yitzchak. How much older was Yishmael from Yitzchak? Our Besar Shnin. He was 14 years older. Dichsiv va'avram ben shmonim shana v'sheish shanim beledes hagaris Yishmael la'avram. So we know that Avram was 86 years old when Yishmael was born. Uchsiv va'avraham ben ma'as shana v'lei lo es Yitzchak beno. And then Avram was 100 years old when Yitzchak was born. So what do we know? So we know that that's 14 years later because Yitzchak, right? So that all works out. Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledos Osam. And it says that Yitzchak was 60 years old when he had his children. So Bar Kama Hava Yishmael Isyalid Yaakov Bar Shivim Va'arba. So that means that Yishmael, so here's how it works. Yishmael was 74 years old when Yitzchak was 60 years old when Yaakov was 0 years old. This is old to get to the point. We don't care how old Yitzchak was in this Gemara, but it's to figure out how old Yaakov was. So we know that Yaakov was 0 when Yishmael was 74. Kama paisha mishane shisin utlas. So that leaves 63 left because we know that Yishmael died at 137 years old. That's an explicit pasuk. 137 minus 74, that gets us 63. Utanya ha'Yaakov Avinu b'shosh nisporech me'aviv, and we know that Yaakov Avinu, when he got the blessings from his father Yitzchak, ben shishim u'shlosha shana, we know that Yaakov Avinu was 63 years old at the time. Ubo v'perik meis Yishmael, and it was at that time that Yishmael actually died. Dechsiv v'yar Esav ki barech. Okay, so we know that Esav found out that Yaakov got the blessings. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael, vayikach es machlas bas Yishmael achos nevayos. And he went, Esav went, and he got the daughter of Yishmael, the sister of Nevayos. Ah, mimash mashnemar bas Yishmael. Eni odea shiachos Nevayos. If I know the Yishmael family tree, if I already know that she is the daughter of Yishmael, then I know she is the sister of Nevayos. So why do I need to be told both? So what happened was, is that Yishmael was the one who betrothed her. Then he died during the engagement period and her brother came along and finished the job and wedded her off. At any rate, so what we are at is... Shisin Utlas. So that's 63. That's how old Yaakov is at this juncture. 63 when Yishmael dies. The Arbesar Ad Misyalid Yosef. And then another 14 years afterwards is when Yosef is born. So Hashivin Ushiva. That gets us to 77. So when Yosef is born, Yosef is 0 years old. We know that Yaakov Avinu was 77 years old. Okay, so now our reference, Yishmael is done at this point. Yishmael got us to 77. That's what we need Yishmael for. Now we're going to use Yosef as a reference point for a little bit. We know that Yaakov is 77 when Yosef is 0 years old. So based on how old Yosef grows, we could calculate how many years passed for Yaakov's life. Usiv by Yosef ben Shloshim Shon ba'amdil fnei paro. Ah, here's an explicit pasuk. Yosef was 30 years old when he came before Paro. So Hamea Usheva. So that gets us to 107 years old. Yaakov was 77 when Yosef was 0. Yosef turns 30, so let's add 30 years to Yaakov. 77 plus 30 is 107. And then we also have Shev de Savea, Utarti de Kafna. We have the 7 years of plenty, as predicted in the prophecy, and then 2 years into the 7 years of predicted of hunger. That brings us to 7 plus 2. That gets us to Hamea Ushitzars. That gets to 116 years old. So we know at this juncture that 30 years into Yosef's life, plus 7 years of plenty, and the 2 years into the years of a famine. So we got Yaakov to 116 years old. However, we have an issue over here, because this seems to contradict an explicit pasuk. Uksiv by Yomer Paro El Yaakov Kami Me Shnei Chayecha. As some of you may remember, Paro point blank asks Yaakov how old he is. By Yomer Yaakov El Paro Yemei Shnei Megurai Shloshim Umaas Shana. Yaakov says, I am 130 years old. Uh-oh, we got a problem over here. Yaakov claims he's 130 years old, but based on the calculations we did, he should only be 116 years old. So what happened to the remaining how many years?
14.
Very good, Gloria, our mathematician. There we go. So 113 minus 116 is 14. Vameo shitsar havyan. So wait, it's supposed to be 116. What happened to the other 14 years? Ah, elishmami na. Where those 14 years go? Those 14 years were the years that Yaakov spent studying in Yeshivas Shem Ve'ever. And those did not count against him. What do you mean they didn't count against him? What years counted against Yaakov, you might ask? Ah, Detanya Yaakov Beis Ever Mutman Arba Asrei Shana. So the Brisa teaches us, our rabbis teach us, that Yaakov studied for 14 years in Yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver, parenthetical, Aver Mesa Acher Sheyered Yaakov Vinu La'aram Naharayim Shtei Shanim, 2 years after Yaakov arrived in Aram Naharayim by Lavan, that's when Aver dies. Okay, that's a footnote. Yotza Misham, Ubalo La'aram Naharayim, so Yaakov journeys to Aram Naharayim, Nimsa kisha'aman ala be'er ben shivim usheva shana. So we know that when he first meets Rachel at the well, he was 77 years old. Ah, suminal dulo minash. How do we know that Yaakov Avinu was not punished for neglecting his obligation to his parents, akibud abe aim, during the 14 years he studied in yeshiva as yeshiva bachar? Detanya Nimsa Yosef Shapirish me aviv esrim ushtaim shana kishem Shapirish Yaakovinu me aviv. So what happened was that Yosef was taken away from Yaakov Avinu for 22 years. The Yaakov Tfasinu Shisahavyan, right? So for Yaakov, though, right, it was more than that, however. We have 36. It should be 36 in total. 36 years that Yaakov was away from Yitzchak and from Rivka. So if the whole idea is that Yosef is taken away from Yaakov as Mida Keneged Mida, as justice or as a recompense for the years that he took away, he left his parents, it should really be a total of 36 years that Yaakov shouldn't have seen Yosef. Why was it reduced to only 22? Ella, our base to have a base Aver, lo chashalahu. The 14 years that Yaakov was in Yeshiva Shem Aver were not counted. So what should have been 36 years, deduct 14, gets us down to 22. And that's why it was 22 years, not 36 years, until Yaakov saw Yosef again. So, the Gemara asks, the base love an Esrin Shnin Havyan. But wait a minute, Yaakov was not with Lavan for 22 years. He was there only 20 years. Where do we get the other 2 years from? Because we know that he took his sweet time along the path. The Tanya Yotzameran Arayim Ubalo Lusukos Ba'asa Sham Shmona Eser Chodesh. He was there in Sukkos for 18 months. How do we get 18 months? So Shnemar v'Yakov Nasa Sukkos of even low bias. L'mikneu Asa Sukkos. So Rashi points out, you built a bias for the winter months to take shelter in your house. You make huts, you make sukkahs, you make gazebos to enjoy the spring and summer months. So the fact is, though, Sukkos, it says bias in singular. That's 6 months for the winter. It should say Sukkah. Why does it say Sukkos? To tell us that he stayed 2 summers over. So that gets us to 18 months. Base El, Asa Shisha Chadashim Hikr Zvachim. And in Base El, he spent another 6 months. 18 plus 6 gets us to 24. That accounts for the other 2 years to bring us to a whopping total of 22 years, but not 36 years that Yaakov was separated from Yosef. And a point to note at the end is that even though he was there and he was busy bringing offerings to Hashem, he was purportedly doing a mitzvah at the time. Behikru Zvachem, he brought offerings to Hashem. Nonetheless, the fact that he neglected to visit his parents in the meanwhile, that was held against him. And according to this Gemara, that's at least one of the factors as to why he was separated from Yosef at that stage in his life. Hadron Olach Megillah Nikreis. This brings us to the end of the first parak, the first chapter in Megillah. Yashar Koach, everyone. And, Irwin, I know you're away right now, but you could send us some scotch from where you are right now, okay? We'll have to, next time when you're here in person, we'll have the scotch. I'll be belated to see him. All right. Whew. Okay, let's take a breath. I guess in a perfunctory way, I have to stop to ask for questions, but my head's already spinning from all the math. I'm actually surprised that I made it through as relatively smoothly as we did, because usually these things bog me down a lot. So, but okay, any questions that I could help address that are on your mind or that I can't help address, but you want to express anyway? All right. If anyone
Rabbi, wants to... Rabbi, I have some little trunk if you join me.
Alas, Rabbi Cohen's in Israel now, so I'm tied down to the community here, which is a lovely thing. I love the community here, but that means I can't join you either. When do you come back, Irwin? I forgot.
I'm on my way back down.
Oh, all right. As Eliezer had, Shakfitzes Adarach. He should get back very soon, safely and soundly. Okay. We are starting a new parak now, and welcome to those who are just joining us. We are starting the second parak in Megillah. Now, no more mathematics, but also for now, no more agadata, no more story time. We are getting back to just really good old typical halachic passages in the Gemara. And we're going to learn some of the halachos about how to read the Megillah, what makes a kosher Megillah. But what's going to be fascinating about the rules that we learn here about Megillah, it's not just limited to Hilchos Purim, but actually we're going to cross-reference it with the laws of reciting Shema, the laws of Hallel, the laws of Shemona Esrei, which are things that come up far more frequently than Purim. So you may say, why do I need to learn all these details about Megillah? First of all, Torah is Torah. But second of all, there's going to be some very practical applications as well. So without any further ado, let's jump in, Rabbosai. Let's jump in. Hakorei es ha-Megillah limafreya. Someone who reads the Megillah limafreya. Now, usually the word limafreya, we see it in monetary law. We translate as retroactively, meaning I can invalidate a financial agreement retroactively, limafreya. But over here, there's two different understandings. The Meiri gives the understanding we will be going with, is that you just read the Megillah out of order. You read Perek Tests, and then you decide to read Perek Dalet afterwards. And it's not a proper reading, because you messed up the narrative. That's not a proper reading. There's another version, I think, based on Rashi and Brachos, where lemafreya means literally reading it backwards. Like you would read one word from like the last word, then the second to last word, and the third to last word like that. That, of course, also would not be yotzei. But the chiddush is, even if you read it properly, but just not in the correct order, that would not be a valid reading. So lo yotza. Kara alpeh, let's say you read the Megillah balpeh, you read it without actually looking inside. So do we have any Balei Kriya with us here tonight? Okay, so you know, you get someone like, Judd, you're regular Balei Kriya, I remember you, but not a Megillah. So let's say you have someone like Nat Sandberg, who winds up laning 50 times over the course of Purim. So he could probably lane it by heart. Nonetheless, he's still supposed to look inside. You're not supposed to read it by heart. Kara Targum or Bechol Lashon Lo Yatza. If you read in Aramaic or if you read it in any other language, in general, you are not Yotze. However, Avokorno Salazos Bilaz. If you have people who they only understand French, it's a little bit of debate how to understand. Does it mean they exclusively only understand a foreign language, or maybe they just understand a foreign language better than Hebrew? Okay, so let's just go with the understanding that they only understand French. So then you may read it in French to them. Let's say you don't have a Megillah that's written in French. So not to worry. This is what, by the way, most of us do. Most of us, probably including myself, probably don't know the precise translation of every single term in the Megillah. So Valoes Shashama Ashuris Yatza, not to worry. The beauty of hearing it in the original Hebrew is that even if you don't understand it, you are still Yotze. A similar principle in davening as well. Ideally, I want to understand what I'm saying. But even if I don't, and I'm still davening to Hashem, there's a benefit to that from saying it in the original Hebrew. Kara Seirugin. So what is Seirugin supposed to mean? So Rashi explains for us what that means. Based on the Gemara tells us later, but you know, we don't want to wait till the Gemara tells us. We want to no shot right now. So korimat uposek v'shoa v'chozer uposek. Let's say you read a little bit, take a little bit of a breather. You let everyone, scream their everyone's ears off with Haman and the banging, and it goes on for a while. Or umitznane. Let's say you didn't fall asleep, but you know it's been a long fast. You're starting to doze off a little bit. Nonetheless, yatsa. Halacha l'maisa, like, you know, at what point am I not considered to be Yotze? So usually the halacha is if I space out, but my finger still stays on the place. So I might space out, I might be thinking about other things, but then my finger follows along. And when he says Esther Hamalka, I'm like, oh, Esther, okay, my finger's still in the right place. That's considered to be following the Megillah enough to be Yotze. Next, Hayakosva Dorsha Umagia. Let's say you are looking from Megillah A to write Megillah B, and you're reading from Megillah A as you're writing. Dorsha, let's say you are teaching the Megillah, And happens to be, as you're going through and teaching Megillah, you say, you go through pasuk by pasuk, and you say every word out loud. Umagiyah, or let's say you are scanning the Megillah to correct it. Then, in kiveh libo yatzavim lav lo yatza. If when you were reading, your kavana was also the yotze mikra Megillah, then even though this wasn't primarily an act of mikra Megillah, Lamaisa, you read through all the words. It's a little unconventional, but it would still count in the end of the day. You want to hear a crazy case about correcting something in a sefer? Let me tell you something crazy that just happened this morning. So when I was, we had Shiva house at Stephen Cohen. So on Monday, no one knew how to lane. So I, you know, figured out on the spot. It wasn't the prettiest laning you've ever heard, but we got the job done. And they corrected me on one or two words that I messed up on, but that's how it goes. That was Monday. Today is Thursday. This morning when he got up, same exact laning for Balak again, the first aliyah of Balak. I read it and I get to the words, I get to the word Vayomer. Vayomer Elohim. And then the Gabbai says, no, Vayavo Elohim, as in Vayomer Elohim. And he's like, okay, I'm going to read the pasuk out loud for you word by word. And you tell me what's wrong. He reads it, Vayavo. And I'm like, take a look in the Torah. It says Vayomer. So, you know, I've seen mistakes before where, you know, maybe the Vav should be a Yod. It was a little too long, a mistake. A letter faded away. This was like egregiously, like, it should say Vayavo, and God came, and it says this, and Vayomer Elohim, and God said. So it's like, whoa, that's like a crazy change. Needless to say, we need to do something about that Torah. So I hope to God, for many reasons, we don't have any Shiva homes anytime soon, because our Shiva Torah is out of commission. So anyway, that's my anecdote from today. But the crazy thing was, on Monday, no one caught that. No one caught it on Monday. Maybe I read too fast. Okay, that was the drama this morning. Okay, moving forward. Haisuk Suva Basam Basikra Bakumus Bekankantum. So the Gemara will talk about this. We don't need to worry about what they mean right now, but different kinds of inks or writing. I don't know a good synonym for ink, because I don't mean ink, but different means for writing. Ala Yarva Diftera, and then these are things that you can write on. Lo yatsa ashtake suva ashuris al sefer ubdio. We've learned this before earlier in the first parak, that you need to write it in Hebrew on a cloth, meaning on the parchment, and with proper ink. That is how it has to be done. Any deviation from that, based on like the examples that the Mishnah gave us, would invalidate the Megillah from being used for the mitzvah. That brings us to the end of the Mishnah. Many of these details will be elaborated upon in the Gemara, but let me pause in case there's any clarification questions that I can help address. Any questions at this point? Okay, back to the Halakha Gemaras. Here we go. So we're going to analyze the first part of the Mishnah in the Gemara now. Minahani Mili. How do we know that you're not allowed to read the Megillah Lemafreya? Why can you do that? You know, the halacha is, let's say I'm doing Shnayim Mikra. Let's say I am reading so every week I'm supposed to read the Parsha twice, followed by a Targum, either Unkelis, maybe it could be in English. We've discussed this at another point earlier in Megillah. And so if I read the fifth Aliyah, and then I go back to the third Aliyah and I do them out of order, I'm still Yotzei Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum. However, when it comes to reading Megillas Esther, that's not going to work. Why not? Amar Rava, Damar Kra, we see this rule from the Pasuk. It says, Kich Savam Uchizmanam. Mazmanam Lemafreya Lo. Just as day 13 is followed by day 14, which is followed by day 15, and it's not something that can change, the sequence remains the same. Afksavam Lemafreya Lo. So too, the second parak must follow the first parak, and the third parak must follow the second parak, etc., etc. Ay, midi kriya ksiva, ahacha, asiya ksiva dichsiv, yos osim eshne hayamim. We're not talking about reading and writing the Megillah here. If you look in the words in the pasuk, it says osim. It says osim. It talks about doing. It talks about writing, but it doesn't talk about reading. Ella mehacha d'ksiv ayyamim ha'ela niskarim v'nasim. We've seen this drasha before also. Something familiar. We learn that these days, they should be niskarim v'nasim, remembered and done and performed. Iskish zechir la'asiya. We see that there's a connection between the commemoration of the miracle as well as the performance of the mitzvahs commemorating the miracle. Ma'asiya mafrealo, avskiya mafrealo. Just as the sudas purim, the meal of purim, and giving matanos lev yonim, gifts to the poor, those mitzvahs, the positive mitzvahs that we have on purim, they need to be done on the 14th. They can't be done on the 13th. So too, the order of the reading also must be done in its appointed manner, which is, well, in the order of the Megillah. So, very good. We know that the Megillah has to be read in order. That's a done deal. Tana, but that's not enough. It's not only the Megillah that cannot be read out of order, but v'chein b'halel, v'chein b'kriya shema u'betfila. So too, when it comes to Hallel, when it comes to reading Shema, when it comes to Shemona Esrei as well. Okay, good. Let's go through the proofs. Hallel minolan. We're going to do Hallel, and we're going to, let's see how far we'll get. We'll do Hallel, and we'll do Shema tonight. So Hallel, how do we know Hallel needs to be read in its proper sequence? Here we are. Tichsiv, mi mizrach shemesh amavo. So the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and it always follows that basic trajectory. So we must keep the original trajectory of the Megillah. Rav Yosef Amar, zeh hayom asa Hashem. This is the day. So the day also follows a prescribed order. Rav Avya Amar, yihi shem Hashem b'varach. The word Yehi indicates that shall be as it is. Rav Nachmar Yitzchak, V'itin Rav Achmar Yaakov, Amar Mehocha, Me'ata Ve'ad Olam, from now and forevermore, it shall remain the same. Meaning the Megillah should always be read in the same order. Good. Hallel should always be recited in the same order. Megillah we know already. Good. So now we know Hallel needs to be recited in its proper order. Kriya Shema Ditanya. How do we know that Kriya Shema needs to be read in its prescribed order? You should not read Shema out of order. Kriya Shema. So we have to have, what we're going to do now is we're going to bring in a different machlokus about whether Shema must be read in Hebrew. And then we're bringing in this separate machlokus because it's going to inform us about whether Shema needs to be read in order or not. You'll see what I mean momentarily. Kriya Shema Detanya, Kriya Shema Kichsava. So, Divri Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi held that Kriya Shema must be read in Hebrew and Hebrew only. The Chachamim Omrim B'chol Hashem. The Chachamim say you can read Shema. There's a mitzvah to recite Shema in the morning and the evening. You can recite Shema in any language that you understand well. My time de Rebbe. So why? Where does Rebbe see that you must read Shema in Hebrew in Lashon HaKodesh and Lashon HaKodesh alone? Turning the Amud, Amar Kra Vahayu. It says in the word. It says in the pasuk Vahayu. So what is about right? Vahayu Advarim Ha'ela. So what does that teach us? We've seen this drasha before. Also, the Havyasan Yihiyu. The way it was written is the way it shall remain. As the Parsha Shema, of course, was written in Hebrew. It's in the Torah. So too, it shall be recited in Hebrew. Rabbanon Maitaima, and what is the reasoning of the Rabbanon? That they permit it to be read in any language. Amar Kra, Shema b'chol lashon sh'ata shomeha. That Shema indicates to us that you shall listen, you shall hearken to God, meaning in any language that you can listen and understand it. Rabbi Nayaksiv Shema. Wait a minute. So if the Chachamim use the word Shema, to indicate that any language you understand it can be read in. What does Rebbe do? How does he interpret the word Shema, since he limits Shema to Lashon HaKodesh? Sahumi voile hashmel aznecha masha tamotzi mipicha. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi was makbid that when, you know, when we daven, we try not to disturb people. So there's different kinds of cultures. You go to some shuls, particularly more yeshiva oriented ones, people will be davening out loud, or maybe you go to a Sephardic one also, you can hear it outside. You come to our shul on a regular daily minyan, sometimes you can hear a pin drop. We're, our style is to remain more quiet and not disturb your neighbor. But the reason that one may daven out loud, now you don't need to daven out loud to the point you're disturbing people, frankly, but you may daven a little bit out loud, is because you're supposed to, according to Rehu Nasi, you're supposed to hear the words that you are reciting. And that's when he gets in the word Shema, that you shall hear the words you're saying. Rabbanan Savri, Kaman Damar HaKorei Shema V'lo Shmila Azno Yatsa. However, the Rabbanan, the rabbis, do not need to use the word Shema to indicate that. They're free to use Shema to tell us the drusha that you can read Shema in any language. Now, why don't they need Shema to tell me to say things right? You're nasi. I need to hear the words I'm saying. Because they say that you can still be Yotze even if you don't hear the words that you are reciting. Rabbanan Nami Aksiv V'Hayu. But what did Rabbanan do with the words V'Hayu? Didn't Rebbe derive from words V'Hayu that you need to read in Lashon HaKodesh only? So Ahumi V'Yilei Shlo Yikra L'Mafreya. This is why we brought this Machlokas. What do the Rabbanan use the words V'Hayu for? To teach us that V'Hayu, just as the way Shema was sequenced in the Torah, is the way it shall remain when you have to recite the Shema. You should not recite the Shema L'Mafreya. You should not recite it backwards or out of order. V'Rebbe Shel Yikra L'Mafreya Minale. So what about Rebbe? How does Rebbe know? Where does Rebbe derive the halacha that you can't read Shema L'Mafreya? He learns it from the words, since it should say midvarim. But if you look in the pasuk, it says v'hayu hadivarim. It's midvarim hadivarim. Sorry, midvarim hadivarim. So why doesn't it just say dvarim? Why say hadivarim with the hey hayadia? That extra hey comes to indicate to me the halacha that these words, and not to read them out of order, specifically Rabbi, the way they are. Sorry, just one moment. We have literally one line left. Rabbanan dvarim hadvarim lamashana. What did Rabbanan do with that drasha? They do nothing. They just say that that's not an extra hey. That's just grammatically what makes sense. And that's how we end off this piece of Gemara. So concluding, what we learned today is as follows. And I'll take your question, Phyllis. Thank you for your patience. We learned, first we finished the first parak. Again, mazel tov, everyone. Huge accomplishment. We'll have to arrange for some, maybe a mini siyum, a halftime siyum. So we learned that how many years Yaakov learned in Shem V'Aver was 14, and that's why it wasn't taken into account. And during those 14 years, he was not held to account for going away from his parents, because Talmud Torah, as we learned, is Yosem Mikibud of V'Ein. Then we started the second parak of Megillah, we learned a number of halachos, most notably that the Megillah should not be read l'mafreya, should not be read backwards, out of order. And then we also quoted a braisa, which taught us that in addition to the Megillah, the same halacha applies for Halel, Shema, Shmona, Esrei. And we saw, and we went through the Gemara, and the Gemara gave us the proof text to support each and every halacha. But we only got so far through Halel and Shema. God willing, we'll pick it up next time on Yud Zayin Mabez on 17b. Phyllis.
Okay. So does that, are you talking about, you're talking about Shema, just the Shema or the Bahafta as well?
And the Bahaya? I believe it's a good question. I believe it is referring to the three paragraphs of Shema, if I am not mistaken. Let's
and how about it? How about the fact that you sometimes don't say all of it, you'll say a part of it.
So the halacha is to be yotze kriya shema shal shachris shal arvis. You're supposed to say all three chapters. Is actually why well, we should be better about this at shul, but since we daven mar after shkia, but before tseis ha-kochavim, before three stars are out, even though we say shema during marif, really all three paragraphs need to be repeated again after tseis to be yotze. Let's say you daven marif after tseis ha-kochavim, after three stars are out, and it's certainly nighttime. In theory, you just need to recite shema, and then the first paragraph of the hafta, because you've already been yotze all three paragraphs, so you just say Shema, not for the mitzvah Shema, but for the purpose of Kriya Shema al Hamita. Does that make sense?
What about during other services? Like sometimes you just say the Shema with Nova Hafta and Nova Yayim Shemoa. And what about when you say Krishma?
So what services are you thinking of? What do you have in mind?
During Yom Kippur. You only recite the line.
So the purpose of Shema in that context, a good question, is not for the purpose of the mitzvah Kriya Shema. It's something that we do at the end of Ne'ilah. It's kind of a way of being Makaba Olmahu Shemayim as a tzibor. We're accepting the yoke of heaven together, but that's not being done for the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So that's why it's not connected to Vahafta.
And Al-Hamita?
And Al-Hamita, the Shema that we say for Kriya Shema Al-Hamita is part of the Kriya Shema Al-Hamita. I mean, we say the Shema kind of as a form of protection also from the Mazikin. But if you do not say all three paragraphs, I mean, technically only men are chayav in it, but women are, of course, are always welcome to take upon the mitzvah. It's a time about mitzvah, naturally, because you're chayav once in the morning, once in the evening. So... Yeah. If one wants to fill the mitzvah, if they didn't, they say all three paragraphs. Okay? All right. Any other questions?
I have a comment.
Yes.
A number of years ago, I got curious why we have the order of blessings in the Shemona Esrei that we have. And I started from the beginning, and it seemed to me, And I learned this again with your Uncle Lippa, and he reached the same conclusion, that each bracha, for I think about two-thirds of the Shemona Esrei, maybe more, leads to the next one. Mm-hmm. The accomplishment of the first bracha permits the accomplishment of the second one, and it goes on like that. For example, the elimination of the rebels permits the fulfillment of the Torah scholars to be able to accomplish their potential. As one example,
mm-hmm. Right. So there's a right. You're saying it's important. Thematically, that we maintain the order that Chazal prescribed because there's deeper understandings. These aren't just a bunch of standalone brachos, but one builds upon the other. So there's really a chachma behind it. And for us to mess around with that order, we're messing around with the broader chachma that Chazal programmed into the brachos. So very good. Thank you for sharing that, Zadie. Okay, Rabosai, God willing, next week we'll pick it up on 17B on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Until then, wishing you all a good Shabbos and Mazel Tov again on our completion of the first parak.